WLAK 1260 AM Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. All eyes were on South Texas for the latest test launch of the SpaceX Starship.
3, 2, 1.
Most powerful rocket ever built that SpaceX owner Elon Musk hopes will one day take astronauts to Mars, successfully ignited and completed the first stage, all 33 engines lit, but the rocket was lost 8 minutes into the flight. Thanksgiving week expected to be a busy one for travel. The TSA says it's ready to screen more than 30 million air travelers through next Sunday. Patients and staff have left the Al-Shifa hospital in Gaza, but Israel's denied ordering the evacuation of Gaza's largest hospital, claiming it was requested by the director. Israel's raided that hospital in recent days, claiming it's a Hamas command center. OpenAI ousted its co-founder, Sam Altman, saying he had not been consistently candid in communications with the board. This is ABC News. The United Auto Workers Union voted to ratify the new contract with Ford, and this completes the process that saw 6 weeks of strikes at all of the big three automakers. Workers at GM narrowly approved the new contract. The vote at Stellantis is ongoing, but there's an insurmountable lead. These agreements run through April of 2028. Alec Murdoch, the former South Carolina attorney convicted of murdering his wife and son, pleaded guilty Friday to separate criminal charges.
Murdoch accepted a 27-year state prison sentence for a slew of financial crimes, including money laundering and financial fraud.
He was in the throes of an opioid addiction, and it had taken over his life.
Murdoch's attorney, Jim Griffin.
He's drug-free, and he feels awful about his conduct.
But he says his client is not comfortable with
prison time for the murders of his wife and son, for which he did not do.
Chuck C. Stevenson, ABC News.
Authorities in New Hampshire say a gunman walked into a psychiatric hospital in Concord, shot and killed a security guard before he was shot and killed by a state trooper. Brian Clark, ABC News.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
An RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Scientists are working on a super reflective ultra white paint. Could be a tool in the fight against climate change. Suzanne Potter explains.
Researchers at Purdue University are hoping to bring to market a highly reflective paint that bounces heat off the surface, keeping things cooler, which reduces energy consumption. Emily Barber is a PhD candidate at Purdue who is working on the project. She notes that since energy is often produced by burning fossil fuels like natural gas, energy efficiency leads to fewer carbon emissions.
So especially in warmer climates, if we can keep that roof cool, we can keep the building cool, and therefore we don't have to use much HVAC. We can reduce greenhouse gas that way.
The paint, which may be available to consumers as soon as next year, has been shown to keep outdoor surfaces 8 degrees cooler than surrounding temperatures on a sunny day and up to 19 degrees cooler at night. However, Professor Jeremy Munday from UC Davis says the basic issue with global warming is that the Earth is absorbing more energy than it is emitting. So in order to keep up with the pace of humanity's carbon emissions, which cause the Earth to absorb heat, we'd have to put highly emitting white paint on 1-2% of the Earth, and that would harm wildlife and alter weather patterns.
CO2 levels are still rising, and so we're going to continue to be trapping more and more heat in. We're going to continue to rise, so we're going to have to keep putting more and more of these emitting surfaces up. And so unless we actually get to the root problem and bring CO2 levels back down. This is definitely not a long-term solution.
I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. Clear skies today with highs around 49. West winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Clear skies again tonight, 30. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow, highs around 49. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 27.
From the heart of the St. Croix Valley, we're in touch with you. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
This is the Empowered Caregiver Show. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support, while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here is the Empowered Caregiver and your host, Liza Helen Brand.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Liza Helen Brand, and I have been waiting for this moment for what feels like forever, and I think it's just been a week. Today, I am joined by Amanda Dyer, a director and producer, and her husband, Tom Dyer, director and cinematographer. Oh, I said that so many times before I got on here. And they are the makers of the documentary Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here tonight. You know, I have to take one step back now that I said that. You are married, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
That would have been awkward if that was not true, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Amanda and her brother. No. thank you. So thank you guys so much for being here tonight. So after I watched this video twice and wiped away the tears a little bit, I did do a little Google stalking on YouTube, but don't be worried. I didn't get down to the identity or the social security numbers or anything like that. But what I found was, you guys knew absolutely nothing about caring for someone with a profound disability before you started this project. That just blew my mind because you guys nailed it. I mean, you nailed it. And so to come in with no prior experience, I just couldn't believe it. Could you tell me a little bit about how this documentary came to be?
Yeah. I mean, you said it just right. We had no prior knowledge. We weren't aware of families that were going through things like this. We had kind of set out just to do a creative project together. We both work in the creative field, and we just wanted to do something that was a passion project for us. And we stumbled onto this topic. Amanda happened to see a Facebook post of a friend that turned out to be Jess, who is in the film. She had made a comment about, this is why I've always said there needs to be a documentary about what families like ours are dealing with. And obviously that kind of stuck out to Amanda, and it turned out that we lived 30, 45 minutes from Jess and her family. And so we just met up with them and had a lot of questions. We just didn't know anything about what they were going through or what families like that deal with. And as we started to learn, our jaws just kind of dropped, and it kind of became a research project for us at that point. And it was something that we just couldn't find a lot of other media or information out there that was a personal experience that, you know, that these families are dealing with for people like ourselves that didn't know anything about it. And that was a big motivation for us, was as we were making the film, we were hoping to make it for people like ourselves that just did not know what these families were going through behind closed doors to open other people's eyes like ours were opened.
And that's the best compliment we get, that it's accurate and true and honest. And we owe that completely to all the families that were willing to share their story and just be open, be honest. We tried to make a space where they could do that and give the platform, but it's totally because they were willing to share and really be vulnerable and say things that are sometimes hard to say. So I appreciate you saying that, because that means a lot that a lot of caregivers feel like we did get it accurate.
Oh, 100%. And I want to ask this question throughout the interview to give lots of opportunities to track down the documentary. So let's just start by, how can people find it?
Yeah, we're doing a screening right now in honor of National Family Caregivers Month. So if you go to caregiverdoc.com/NOV, like for November, or just caregiverdoc.com, you can find it. You'll see where you can rent the film and watch during the month. And we also made a promo code for your listeners. If you use Empowered, that will get you a discount on the ticket too.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I will be sure to share that on my social media and on Civic Media's social media as well, because everybody should absolutely see this. So the name of the documentary is Unseen: How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. After the journey of making this documentary, can you tell me who the we is in that title and why you think we are failing family caregivers?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think we is kind of everyone. it's you know, oftentimes family members, friends, it's organizations, it's workplaces, it's our larger government systems and, you know, policies. And that's really what we discovered, is that on so many levels, caregivers are really just being kind of pushed to the side. We heard story after story of people saying, like, even their close friends and family just don't understand. They're not really motivated to try to figure it out, or, you know, they're just kind of like, you guys have something different going on, I'm not really gonna, you know, delve into that, which is heartbreaking for a family that needs support. And then we hear from people at work who lose their job because their companies aren't willing to make some, you know, basic accommodations just for them to be able to keep their job. I mean, of course, we hear countless stories of people who have, you know, there's state programs and benefits that they're entitled to, but they're constantly fighting to get them, or they're there, but they're unfunded. So just that was what was so difficult about working on this project, is it's just we kept seeing so many barriers that families are up against. And that was what was frustrating, and what showed us that something like this really needed to bring that story to light, so others like ourselves could realize, you know, there are lots of places we can make a difference.
I like that. And especially that you mentioned, sometimes it's within these people's own families. And this is something that I kind of preach on this show, is that being a caregiver is a familial duty, right? It's something that we are going to take on regardless. And I feel like a lot of people just feel like each of us are dealt our own, you know, hand in life. And some are luckier than others. But what they're not understanding is this isn't making sure that somebody has a roof over their head and three meals a day. This is an intensive all the time job. And there's consequences, you know, there's things that the caregiver goes through because of that. So I just throw that out there, because it's something that I always grapple with when people, you know, I try to bring awareness to caregiver issues, and sometimes I feel like people just don't get it, because they feel like, well, that's what you do when you're a part of a family. So thank you for pointing that out, that sometimes the people failing are just the family members within their own unit. So mm-hmm. The second half of the documentary title of Unseen: How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters is the why it matters part. Now, I know for me why it matters, but I'm curious what your takeaway is after going on this journey, why it matters.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a few answers to that question. I think the most top of mind one is, you know, the idea that all of us are going to either be caregivers or need caregiving at some point in our lives. And as a society, if we don't put more importance on that, it's going to affect all of us, right? And so why would we not want to put more focus on that? The other one, which is talked about in the film a lot, and hearing it from Jess and these other parents, can be so raw, but it's, you know, the child, you know, being only as healthy as the caregiver, right? I mean, you have to have healthy caregivers to provide quality care for these individuals and these children. And so it matters on multiple levels. And I think that if as communities and as a society, if we were to elevate the importance that we place on caregiving, you know, it would make a big difference in a lot of people's lives.
Absolutely. And quite frankly, it matters economically. I mean, my hearts go out to all of these families, and they deserve quality care and support. But if they were to throw in the towel, these families across the nation, I mean, they are the backbone of the nation, and we cannot sustain the cost that it would take for somebody to provide that 24/7 care. So we absolutely need to take care of the caregivers.
You're talking about millions and millions of people. So anything that affects that many people is going to have wide-ranging effects on our community, you know, economically, systemically, in the workforce, that kind of thing. So it's kind of, you know, of course it matters. It's so easy to brush under the rug, but it once you dive into this and you see how many people it affects, you know, it's hard not to see that it matters.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times somebody maybe knows one person in that position, so they think that's one person going through that. No, that's millions of people. And so it does have a huge impact in all areas of society. I'm Liza Hellenbrand. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver. I am talking with Amanda and Tom Dyer, directors of the award-winning documentary Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. I have to say this documentary really hit home for me. And one thing I didn't give you guys any insight on is my own personal story. And that is, I have a son with autism that was diagnosed at 2 years old. And I'm not going to say that my situation was similar to the Ronnies, or they would have full right to get on an airplane and come over here and slap me, because that is not the case. My son is off in college. You know, he made huge gains, and we're in a good place. And that's why I am here today doing what I'm doing, because I can, and because I know there's so many that cannot. But for me, during those early years, it was all intensive. I mean, he did 32 hours of ABA therapy, occupational therapy, vision therapy, speech therapy. He had sensory issues where he would only eat one or two foods. So we did just so many different therapies, and it was all consuming. And there's more to that story, and I would like to hear your take on it after this short commercial break.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry, with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help, so you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
What really prompted me to call is how respectful and willing to listen you are. We are human beings. People have their beliefs for a whole lot of reasons, some of them rational, maybe some of them not.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate the call, Stephanie. Look, we just need to listen to each other. It doesn't mean we always have to agree. I'm not going to give in on what facts are, but we do have to listen to one another if we want to try to get this country back on track.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today, I have two amazing guests with me, Amanda Dyer and her husband, Tom, who are the directors of the documentary Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. So before we went into that little something-something, I was sharing the story of my son. So I had a son that was diagnosed with autism at 2. We did all of the therapies. When we weren't doing therapies, I was researching other therapies we could be doing and coordinating all these different people and pieces. And it was really a full-time job. And I didn't know it until then. I mean, I didn't know it then. And to be honest, I just started discovering it really over the past few months, how much that journey impacted me. And, you know, after his diagnosis to when he went off to college, my medical chart just started to grow. I mean, it started out with chronic fatigue, anxiety, depression, fibromyalgia, and my own health was declining. And I never made that connection that, oh, maybe it's because of everything that's going on. And I don't think a lot of people do make that connection. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about the health implications. Nate, if you could play the first clip.
I sure can.
You're constantly in some form of a survival mode. And when that happens for years upon years upon years, it weighs on you and it begins to tear away at every aspect of your life. And your mental health is going to change.
I'm just curious, with you two spending so much time with the Ronnie family, how did it impact your physical and mental health? I mean, did you notice a difference?
You know, I don't know if, I think what I noticed, was just, so much of caregiving takes place in the home, mm-hmm. and it takes place behind closed doors and away from, neighbors, away from friends, away from the community. And so, it was easier for us being up close in person with them to see how, families can be so acutely affected by these things. I mean, you know, these families are not only responsible, these parents are not only responsible for 100% of themselves, but they're responsible for 100% of somebody else. And that's a lot to ask of an individual. So it's definitely easy to see how personal, mental, and physical health can suffer at that. I don't think that's something that we really experienced, because I don't think that we were, you know, as
we could go home and not have the same
right
concerns.
At the end of the day, yeah.
I've got to imagine there had to have been some days where you went home and that particular day just took a lot out of you.
Yeah, for sure.
And we were in the thick of the production during the pandemic, and so that added a layer of intrigue to the whole process. And they actually mentioned that one of the therapists in the film mentions this even, that was the first glimpse, like the lockdown for, you know, a short period of time that everyone kind of participated in, was the first glimpse that a lot of us had about what it means, about how caregivers live a big portion of their lives. Because if you have someone who's immunocompromised, or it's just difficult to get out of your house because the world is not accessible, you know, you spend a lot more of your time in isolation. And we saw all the health negative mental and physical health effects that that had on everyone in our communities. And that's just a taste of what many caregivers are dealing with day to day. So I think that was really timely that that was kind of happening. And it also contributed to, with like the school schedule being interrupted, the Ronnie family having to constantly adapt and change the routine, losing their providers, things like that. Like, it just made it so much more complicated. And I mean, really, I think they were in some of their hardest days at the times we were trying to produce this. And in a way that was powerful, because there's always somebody in their darkest days. So we feel like that's, you know, a good, like, the Ronnies are doing better now. They moved to a different state, have gotten some different resources, you know, made some changes and things that have really benefited them as a family. But even I've heard Jess say, you know, she's like, there's always, we're doing better right now, but there's always someone who's in the depths and hasn't found those resources yet. So we're glad the documentary shows those hard parts.
Yeah, definitely. Well, a couple things. I like how you mentioned COVID, because you're right, with all of the heartache and sorrow and everything that went along with COVID, to me, it really emphasized caregivers and caregiver needs. It really put a spotlight on it. I mean, people were forced to look at it because the care providers weren't there. These people were in the homes. You know, people, a lot of it came out of it. When you look at the caregiver research and what they're proposing, a lot of it really stemmed from what they learned during the pandemic. And you know what? I just want to step back one minute and just share that a lot of the families in this film were probably had children that most likely back in the 50s or 60s would have been institutionalized. And so, you know, somewhere along the 70s, in the 70s, they caught wind that these institutions really weren't more than warehouses for people with disabilities, and it was in no way for them to live, and they started closing them down, which is a good thing. But then that meant that those kiddos are now in the home with parents with no support and limited resources and sometimes limited knowledge. And I just wanted to share that, because everybody's caregiving experience looks a little different, but the people that you interviewed, for my takeaway, were the people that are probably honestly really struggling the most.
Yeah, I mean, there were some extreme circumstances that a lot of these families were in, and everyone's experience was different, and they all had their own individual experience. And I think what was just surprising to us was how similar a lot of their responses were with just what they were dealing with mentally and from a support perspective. Even though their experiences were so different, a lot of the things that they were struggling with were similar.
We're very same. Yeah. I'm sure that makes perfect sense. And, you know, a lot of them were talking about respite and the need for self-care, and how you can preach all you want about needing self-care, making time for self-care. But when you have somebody that needs you 24/7, that is not a reality. Mm-hmm. So just real quickly, I'm just curious, what do you think would be a good first step for us as a society to getting the caregivers the support they need? Have you ever thought about that over dinner?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard to narrow it down, but I think one thing is just being a friend. Like, it doesn't have to be this grand gesture. A lot of caregivers just want a friend they can count on who will listen to them, and that's not hard to do. So just starting there is so approachable and something that anybody can do.
Amen. I love that. Let's end on a happy note. We'll be back after this short, whatever it is.
Connecting with you on air, online, and on the Civic Media app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM, WLAK,
Amory's radio station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark.
All eyes were on South Texas for the latest test launch of the SpaceX Starship.
3, 2, 1.
Most powerful rocket ever built that SpaceX owner Elon Musk hopes will one day take astronauts to Mars, successfully ignited and completed the first stage, all 33 engines lit, but the rocket was lost 8 minutes into the flight. Thanksgiving week expected to be a busy one for travel. The TSA says it's ready to screen more than 30 million air travelers through next Sunday. Patients and staff have left the Al-Shifa hospital in Gaza, but Israel's denied ordering the evacuation of Gaza's largest hospital, claiming it was requested by the director. Israel's raided that hospital in recent days, claiming it's a Hamas command center. OpenAI ousted its co-founder, Sam Altman, saying he had not been consistently candid in communications with the board. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Badgers get a win at the Kohl's Center. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Badgers men's basketball team snapped a two-game losing streak with a 78-68 win over the Robert Morris Colonials, a small private university out of western Pennsylvania. Wisconsin now 2-2. They head to Virginia on Monday night. NBA, the Bucks with a victory in Charlotte. Milwaukee turning up the heat in the fourth quarter to win 131-99 over the Hornets. 7 Bucks players with double-digit scoring. Damian Lillard had 27 points. And says it was nice to get a win on the road, or as he calls it, roadkill, especially in an in-season tournament game.
I mean, anytime you can get some roadkill, it's always good for your team. In this in-season tournament, we want to be able to win all these games and give ourselves the opportunity in the end. We know that the point spread is going to be important, so we had to keep our foot on the gas tonight as well. And I think that's good for our mentality. You know, once we get teams down, we got to put them away.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. Clear skies today with highs around 49. West winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Clear skies again tonight, 30. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow, highs around 49. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 30.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. This includes a commitment to news. Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
I'm not even clear from conflicting headlines whether or not Robin Voss has the cojones to move forward with impeachment against Megan Mulf. Why would he do such a thing? You know, just a couple of weeks after he said he wasn't going to do such a thing. Well, he's been threatened, huh? By what? A group headed by his primary opponent, Adam Steed.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Let's talk about the debate over stadium renovations at American Family Field, what the team's going to kick in, what they're willing to kick in, what state legislators are willing to approve. There have been some more adjustments to the bill, and I'll admit I haven't talked much about it because I feel like everything's all still rather fluid.
I think fluid is the right word, Pat. You're a man of words. Way to go. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
The owner of a Michigan rental that's called The Castle is being sued by a group of 7 women who stayed there, found it consumed with bats.
Tell the best part, though.
The exterminator allegedly found multiple inches of bat guano kicking the floor.
I think I just threw up a little bit in my mouth. Oh, my God.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Like smelt fries and music on the river, we're uniquely Amory. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
You
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today, I am speaking with Amanda and Tom Dyer, who were the directors and creators of the award-winning documentary Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. You know what? I want to give you guys just a second to toot your own horn. I saw all of the awards that you won on the bottom of the trailer, but tell me about them. What were some of the highlights? What people are noticed? What awards have you won?
Yeah, I don't even.
Do we have the list?
Yeah, you have a list.
So probably one that I'm definitely excited about was the Knoxville Film Festival. We won, I think, the documentary category, which we're from Tennessee. So that one was, you know, it's close to our hearts. And then a couple of them were film festivals that we were invited to participate in. And I think that was cool because it's, you know, you can submit yourself to film festivals, but they approached us because they heard about the film and wanted to feature it. So that was definitely cool. There were some around like women's issues and healthcare issues. So them finding the film and wanting to share it with their audiences was definitely, you know, feels good when people see that as a tool that they can use.
Oh,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I think, well, I just think one of the best things about it to us was just that a film like this was getting attention from people who were looking at films and a place where I'm not sure film festivals is a place where topics like this usually make a big splash. So it felt good that people were interested in hearing these stories, right? And that these stories were getting some attention, because that was the whole purpose of what we were doing, was to try and get this experience in front of people who were not used to it.
Well, you deserve every award that you won and more, because not only did you make a beautiful, wonderful piece of art, for lack of a better word, documentary, but you did. You really opened the door to change the hearts and minds of people and continue this fight that we're fighting for these caregivers. So I can't thank you enough. But, you know, in addition to the caregiver stories and interviews that you had on the film, you also had some amazing people speaking on the issue. One being social worker Crystal Polk. Crystal just hit the nail on the head over and over in this film. And I wanted to play one clip, which she was talking about screening for caregivers. If you wouldn't mind, Nate, playing the clip two.
Parent caregivers are more prone to different physical illnesses because of their mental health. We are not targeting this population. We're not screening them appropriately. Professionals don't look at them the same way as the identified patient, which is the child who has a disability. So practitioners and professionals don't screen them the same way as the mother who has a newborn, for example. She goes back to her doctor and she's screened for postpartum depression. Or maybe the returning veteran is screened for PTSD because they're more prone to be at risk for those diagnoses. So we're looking for that to make sure that we're treating them appropriately and they're getting the resources they need. We're not doing that with this population, and that's really unfortunate. They are unseen and they deserve more attention, more mental health resources, and more interventions for the family, because it's going to benefit them and the family unit, which in turn helps everybody.
That is so powerful and so true. As I shared how my medical chart continued to grow with symptoms and problems and ailments as I continued my caregiving journey, not once did a doctor ever ask me if I was a caregiver or what that entailed or what my stressors were or my, you know, mental wellness during the journey. What did you hear from caregivers about the support that they received from their primary physicians?
Yeah, that was one thing we definitely wanted to include, because we heard many stories about how, you know, parents are spending, especially if your child has a rare disease or some kind of medical complexity and in the hospital, you know, you're having to basically function as a nurse a lot of your day, or you're in and out of the hospital. You are used to interacting with medical professionals constantly, but so many parents told us that no one really ever asked about them, even though, you know, they might be living at the hospital for weeks or months on end, and everyone just kind of assumes you're figuring it out. Or they're, you know, annoyed with you that you didn't get something done or didn't get some therapy done or didn't do some appointment you were supposed to do, just having, not really having any understanding or compassion for the fact that your day is book solid with all these tasks and you have a, you know, a household to run. So we've been working with some children's hospitals and universities as well to do screenings of the film as a way to educate providers. You know, they know their area of expertise, of course, but, you know, the caregiver is really has a role in that conversation as well. So trying to use the film as a tool to kind of just open minds to say, oh, we need to consider the caregiver in this equation as well. So, yeah, you would think that that was an area where it wouldn't really, the story would already be understood, but that's not, that wasn't the case at all.
Thank you so much for doing that, because in my mind, that's kind of where the caregiver journey, I don't want to say should start, but it needs to be implemented in the medical system. You know, I said earlier, I struggle with this caregiver concept, I struggle reaching caregivers because so many people don't identify themselves as a caregiver. So to have that screening in, you know, your annual physical could be huge, because what they don't tell you, nobody tells you, who would tell you that when you're a caregiver, your rate of anxiety, depression, obesity, heart disease, so many different conditions just skyrockets due to the stress that you're constantly putting on your body. So for me, the doctor's office is such a great place to start. So thank you for going into the hospitals and doing that work around it. It is so needed.
I was definitely surprised to learn that not people don't always identify as a caregiver as part of this project. You know, you're like, well, I'm a parent, or I'm a daughter, or a brother. You know, you kind of have these other family roles that you do identify as, and that's fine if that's not how someone wants to identify. But yeah, I think that makes it easy to forget that it is a very critical role, and it has so many effects on every aspect of your life. So yeah, I hope more people embrace that role as something to be honored and respected and valuable.
They should. I think that they should wear it as a badge of honor. And I don't think it's something that you need to necessarily identify as. You know, I never went to a doctor's appointment and said, I am my son's caregiver and also his mom. No, you know, it's just kind of a given. But the biggest thing for me is why I want to work on the self-identification component of it is because of all of the implications to your physical, mental, and financial health. That part of being a caregiver is something that people should really be aware of. And like I said, when you're caught in the thick of it, you're not. So, I could go on and on, but I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the resource end of it. You know, finding the right support and resources can be exhausting in its own right. And you touched on that a little bit. Many families feel like the larger system is failing them, that the supports are not there, the resources are not there, the systems are hard to navigate. Like you said, all the focus is put on the child and not the family. In your journey of making this documentary, what did you learn about navigating these systems and how much paperwork and legwork goes into making things happen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously what we learned about it was all through Jess and her family and what they were going through. It wasn't anything that we experienced firsthand, but seeing and hearing the struggles that they dealt with, where it was just dead end after dead end, and you would put so much work into this avenue only to get so far down it and realize, oh, that's not going to work for reason A or whatever it is. You know, there seemed to be roadblock after roadblock in a lot of these cases. I remember one of the early things that just shocked me was talking with Ryan was about how there were, you know, when they moved to Tennessee, there were systems, there were policies in place that they were planning on taking full advantage of to help their family. And when they were unable to get that, the reasons that they were given were like, oh, well, yes, we're supposed to have this in place, but we don't have the money or we don't have the staff. Or, and it was just, it just seemed so difficult for families to just even chase after these things that are advertised, or at least, you know, on a website somewhere that, sure, hey, we have this resource. And then once you start digging into that, it doesn't always end up what it seems like it is.
No, I can attest to that firsthand. So my son is doing well, but he still needs support. He's always going to need support. And during the summer, myself, like many other families, qualify for respite funding. Finding respite providers are near impossible, but I had someone. I did all the legwork. I found the person. I made the connections. I made it happen. That person needed to sign up and, you know, do some paperwork and whatever. She was going to meet with him once a week during the summer. Over the course of the entire summer, we worked on paperwork. She never once got paid from that agency. I paid her out of pocket on my own, and it wasn't really to give respite to myself. I like I said, my son doesn't have that level of care needed, and quite frankly, now that he's off to college, I like spending time with him. It was also to give him respite from me. You know, sure, it goes both ways, mm-hmm, and to get them out into the community, because, mm-hmm, you know, when you're 19 years old, going out into the community with mom is not cool. even if I'm the coolest, yeah, mom, it's just not cool, you know? So I totally understand, you know, some of those struggles that you're talking about. And another one was, the respite and the quality of respite. One mother said, I get lots of hours. This is what we were talking about before, but there are no respite workers. We need to make this a career with benefits and training. Just again, through, you know, you said, how long did you spend with this family in total?
Well, 2 or 3 years all told.
Took a while.
So over the course of 2 or 3 years, what are some of the takeaways that you learned about the paid respite system?
Yeah, we hear that all the time, that I'm entitled to these hours, or I have the funding to pay for them, or even I'm able to pay myself, but I can't find a person who's reliable and trustworthy that will continue to come. And, you know, especially if you need some special training to understand the situation, you don't want to be training someone new every other day. So we hear from parents all the time who are like, I just gave up on that. We just don't, you know, we have a couple of friends or family, maybe if we're lucky, who will help when they can, but people just give up on it because it doesn't work. You look at like the rates that they can pay, like the agencies pay, and some of that's controlled by loss. There's so many factors involved here, but across the board, it seems like it's just undervalued as a service, as a profession. And that's fundamentally what we need to change. It needs to not just be a job that's a throwaway job. It should be something that's valued and respected and seen as a career that takes a special skill, and you train and you move up in your career. And we need to place more